and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of Mayor's Bread has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's Live Full report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABread.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
You talk about Santa Claus. You want to know what it's all about. Santa Claus got drunk last night. Everybody tried to throw him out. But I want to tell you, folks, how it all began. Santa stopped at a neighbor's house and started drinking good gin. Now, while I was with him, I named a few. I love to name some of them whiskeys that Santa was drinking to you. It was way back in the ancient age, down in Mid Spring Valley.
There we go. Off to a great start on the Christmas music. Steve Asmussen joining us, and you may have seen yesterday at TDN, Steve wrote an op-ed piece, and in addition to his thoughts, also Dr. Hawk contributed as well. And Steve, good morning, first of all.
Good morning.
Steve, this is kind of an inside baseball topic, and you know, the general public and the horse playing community, you know, might not have been all that aware of, you know, some of the elements that you discuss in this piece, which includes, you know, racetracks in essentially cost cutting efforts, restricting training a day a week, and you know, talk about what caused you to step out and take to the keyboard?
Well, it's a practice that is started at lower level racetracks that is, you know, feels that it's creeping its way up, and I just don't think that it allows for horsemanship or Mother Nature herself for us to do the best job with horses. And my kids listening me complain about it told me I needed to put my name on something, and if I feel strongly about it, and obviously I do, strong enough to put my name on it, I just think that it's a trend that does not benefit horses and horse racing in turn, and I think it misses the mainstream, but I didn't come from the mainstream. I feel that I've worked my way up, and everybody in that position needs all the tools and opportunities they can be afforded.
I can just tell by, you know, some of the comment and the support that it received. You know, you talked about the challenges from the training side. Dr. Hawk talked about from a veterinary side. Explain to people the challenge and the difficulty that, you know, having to essentially, you know, walk a horse a day.
A situation is you can head up to the racetrack planning on working, not like the surface when you get there for whatever reason, too wet, too dry, just not suiting you for the day. And if the racetrack is closed the following day and you're dealing with an owner or a group of owners that have a date circled of when they want to run and everything, I think that it is a variable that is simply in the way of doing what is best, doing what a horseman feels is best with the horse on any particular day.
I suppose the track maintenance aspect, we can more easily understand when there's been, you know, the extreme weather conditions, and you know, I see.
Well, as you say that, I don't even believe that is an understanding. That is going to happen.
Right.
Weather is going to interrupt your schedule, and that is out of our control. But when you add the element of taking another day away, or, you know, having to weigh not doing anything at all with a race coming up, or any it is not a practice that was used at any level 15 or 20 years ago. And like I said, the reason that I chose to speak out is it is a trend that is going in the wrong direction and not one that should have ever been allowed to start.
How I suppose that this is something that, you know, the HBPAs, right, the horsemen's organizations.
I did speak with Eric Hamelbeck about this trend after talking with racetracks and other, you know, state regulators that fell on deaf ears. And then I did reach out to Eric, and this was his idea. And glad it came together the way that it has. And as you had mentioned, I'm very encouraged by the feedback and response that I've received since yesterday.
Well, you know, certainly when, you know, when somebody that you know, has, you know, has the gravitas that you do, and also notably has horses stabled at, you know, as many facilities as you do, it's got to, people have to sit up and take notes.
Everything my family has is because of a racehorse. Everybody's very familiar with my history, my parents, their involvement with racing and racetracks, and it's no way to measure how strongly I feel about doing what we think is right.
I could touch on some of the things that Dr. Hawk brought in, but touch on that, Steve, in terms of...
Well, speaking with, Erica from the HBPA, Hamelbeck, about this, and some ideas originally, I could speak from my position, what I know, what I do, and where it affects me. But
right.
I did not think that it would be appropriate for me to be speaking for a veterinarian, and I felt that was a very, you know, a practicing racetrack veterinarian and what they deal with. I thought that was also a view that should be heard.
Well, and some of the things that I'll mention, I'll send out the link to the piece at TDN, but, you know, he brings up the specifically metabolic issues, and, you know, the habit and practice of a horse, and of course their digestive system, and all of a sudden, you know, a horse, and especially
with all of the things that have happened in racing and the heightened accountability and everything, as we've seen, regulators, politics, in everything, with what the country's going through, doing nothing is not the right answer. Doing nothing does not guarantee anything, and I just feel that it's an error in the wrong direction.
And you know what occurs to me as you say that, and you know, you bring up, you know, you can bring up track management and regulators. This feels, Steve, very similar to what we've been discussing regarding the crop and regulators arbitrarily making these decisions without consulting the jocks and without their input, and then here are decisions being made without the input of horsemen.
There are several issues out there which create a tremendous amount of opinions. The reason that I put it out as such in an op-ed is from my point of view.
Right.
And my point of view and my responsibility and my job is to take care of these horses. I feel that the racetrack being closed a day a week is an example of us not being able to do what is best for the horse, and that is my issue. All of the others, millions of opinions and things like that, but I do feel very qualified to speak on this subject and doing my best, trying to get a horse over there and keep one healthy and racing as long as possible.
Have you, in any of the circumstances where this has cropped up, have you reached out? I mean, have you know, has there been any interaction between track management and the horsemen?
Well, I'm sure that there is interaction and discussions. I want to compliment Lone Star Park and Remington as something they discussed doing, and through conversations and them seeing my point or the horseman's point, have kept their racetracks open 7 days a week. But the prospects of closing it one day a week, Matt Vance and Scott Wells that have run Remington Park and Lone Star over the years, it has come up, and they have kept the racetrack open 7 days a week, and I feel that it's helped their racing crop and their product by doing so.
Well, and in fact, speaking of which, press release yesterday, right, from Lone Star about the upcoming year and the news continue. You and I, and you've stressed this repeatedly. I mean, the news in Texas in particular has been, just gone from strength to strength.
No, absolutely. And, there are some very good people have put a program in where their racing is being supplemented by taxes on horses and horse supplies,
right,
and feed and money that is being spent to take care of them. You know, the better the product, the more horses, the more they're racing, the better they're doing. And I just, in this day and age of racing, for us to have something going so positive right now, I cannot commend them enough on what they've done to help Texas racing.
Well, I wanted to make sure we had an opportunity to let Steve, speak publicly and to a wide stakeholding and horse playing audience, because the point can't be driven home enough. There's nobody out there that has the interest of the horse more at heart than the horseman, and in daily direct contact, and that's the overarching message to this op-ed piece.
Absolutely, everybody needs to do all we can do to help horses, just for their general health and welfare, because they are the sport, the horses themselves.
Steve Aspison. Steve, I appreciate it on short notice to grab you here, and I'm not gonna ask about racetrack performances of late, although I thought Carriere was very good on Saturday.
Well, we have some very exciting horses to talk about in the future.
There you go.
We're going to do our best to take care of them so we can talk about them.
Steve Aspison, everybody. Steve, if we don't talk by chance, best wishes to you and the family and all of the all of the staff for a terrific holiday season and new year. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Steve Aspison, and I'll send the link to this, both he and Dr. Hawk, laying out an important message that cutting corners to try to save a day of maintenance and security and whatever whatever cost cutting benefit there is to cutting out a day of training, it's not in the best interest of of the game and of horsemen and of owners and horse players. I mean, a racehorse that is in prime physical condition, that is training toward a start or training between starts, you don't let the air out of them a day like that. It doesn't. You can give horses days off when needed, but a horse in prime condition needs to get out there and gallop those 2 miles and blow off that steam and either gain conditioning or maintain the conditioning, and that shouldn't be a hard equation or a message that needs to be driven home. But good for Steve, and I'm sure we'll get some other feedback. You mentioned Eric Hamelbeck and HBPA, and I'm sure if I reached out to Alan Foreman, TRA, I'm sure has dealt with this. But I think that was a fair comparison. You know, the jocks are frustrated that there's rules being administered to them by people who have, you know, not really had any horse riding and race riding experience. And this is very similar. The people that, you know, are making, you know, making up rules that don't consult and don't take input from, you know, the people that care the most and look out for the welfare of the racehorse. Bottom of the hour upon us, and we'll stay here. And I think Seth Merrow is standing by.
I am. I am here on a lovely upstate Wednesday morning. I went out for a walk earlier, and there was snow on the ground.
There is. This morning, I mentioned Tina was greeted. She walked, opened the door to go to school, and was like, "Oh, it's snowing."
Yeah.
And then, it's snowing a little now. Well, listen, this is the region we've chosen. there's no getting away from it. Seth, I do have to utilize your Down East heritage. Mm-hmm. For a conversation, and you know where I'm headed, because, you know, word came about, what, 2.5 weeks ago that Scarborough Downs was going to cease operation. And there wasn't a lot of lead up, but there was a swift and anguished reaction from not just from New Englanders, from anybody that over the years. And I tried to reach Mike Sweeney and haven't been able to, but you know, you're as eligible as anybody to talk about Scarborough Downs.
Yeah, you could kind of see the handwriting on the wall. And for folks who are unfamiliar, it's just outside of Portland. I've been going there for years, since I was a kid. I don't remember back to the days, but the history of the track, it started as a thoroughbred track. By the time I got around to it, they had gone completely to the sulky side of things. But when I was a kid, yeah, you'd spend the day at the beach and then go over to the races at night. But just over the years, it has kind of changed a little bit. And there was still some simulcast action there in the daytime. But, yeah, I don't know how many years ago, they took down the lights, so it became an all-afternoon product. And, you know, you'd go into the facility, and they'd close down the actual grandstand. The bottom floor was open, and so there was clearly far lesser of a crowd over the last few years. And the property had been purchased, and they were starting to develop around. Because it's, for folks who have never been there, it's just outside of Portland, and it's kind of on a commercial strip, but you head onto a driveway, and you drive back in. And there was a lot of property, just the track, and then a lot of just kind of open space around there, but that's been started to be developed a little bit. And when decisions were made as far as where casinos would be, the local population kind of said no to Scarborough. And as they say, at that point, you kind of felt like maybe the handwriting was on the wall. So when I saw the news that pop up that morning, I felt bad, because it's still harness racing in Maine is fun, and they take it seriously, and I've been up in the fall a lot and taken in the fair racing, and that is a lot of fun. And Scarborough and Bangor played as the main tracks, and so we'll see what happens up in Maine. When you were reading the articles, they were kind of enthusiastic that maybe this would lead to a newer, more 21st century type of track being built. We'll see how that plan works out, but yeah, it was unfortunate to see it coming, but as I say, it seemed like the handwriting had been on the wall for a few years now.
70-year history, so not dissimilar to Calder, which essentially was 50 years. And there, I mean, it's known obviously for the more for the harness, but there was some flat racing there as well, right, at one time?
Yeah, it began as a thoroughbred track. Like I say, I do not remember those before my time, but when it first opened, it was thoroughbreds, and then eventually went over. I think for a while it was both, and then eventually went over to only the standardbreds.
And season wise, what was their typical calendar?
Well, clearly they were aiming for the you know, as they say, the beach goers in the daytime, and then pop over to the races at night when I was a kid. And so the season would, you know, be, I don't know exactly, but April, May to, and then they went to, they would kick off, they would end either late August, early September. And that's when their fair season would go
right.
For a month and a half or so. They'd pop to the fairs for a week at a time. And then they would come back to Scarborough for maybe another month or so.
Yeah, the I mentioned that I can't remember the why or wherefore, but we were in Maine, and I might have even been with my parents for something, and I was somebody invited me, said, "Do you want to go to Scarborough?" And I couldn't really break away, and I wish I had. It looks like a pretty grandstand. You look at the pictures of it, and sizable too. I mean, this was not like a little nook. Like Rockingham, essentially, right? I mean, similar?
It was a pretty sizable grandstand, which maybe goes back to the thoroughbred days. I mean, that even when I was going at kind of the height of the time I went there, it was never jam-packed, but certainly they were getting a decent little crowd, and that grandstand was open. But over the past few years, that the upper portion, the seating portion of the grandstand, had been closed now for a while, with the bottom portion open. And then over to the side, they had a clubhouse area, and that was open as well for spectators and whatnot, and simulcast wagering and whatnot. But, it was... And again, they took down the lights a few years ago, which changed it to an afternoon product, which, I haven't seen the numbers over the years, but that probably didn't help either.
Hmm. What was the track abbreviation?
What was it? SCA?
Makes sense.
I'm guessing right. Because it... you would see it not a lot, because admittedly, over the last few years, it had become a cheaper product. But you would see it occasionally up here at Saratoga Harness. You would see horses coming in from Scarborough. And if you were at Scarborough and you saw a horse coming from Saratoga, now you had the class edge. That was fun, yeah.
Now, I'm going to, as I do very frequently, I'm going to put up a... The vintage postcards of racetracks. I collect quite a few and have got several dozen, but you look at the postcards. Here's one which has got to be from right at the beginning, where it's just flat horses, actually. And there's a picture of the jocks. It's like a quad card. And then a beautiful black and white photograph of the harness. Welcome to Scarborough Downs. And this looks like it's probably from... probably from the 60s. Not a good weekend, Seth, between this and this news and Calder.
Yeah, I mean, Calder wrapping up was kind of sad, too. Florida, going back to the time I started following, they had the circuit, which I've always said is kind of the prime way to do it, it seems like, just to keep the product fresh, to keep the fans involved, and to keep the racetracks and turf courses fresh. South Florida had the three-race circuit, for a three-track circuit for a while, Hialeah, Calder, and Gulfstream. And a number of other major jurisdictions kind of had the same. And now it's, going to go to Gulfstream and for the year. And that just has to take a toll on the turf course down there. And again, the just the mentality of the fans, just going from track to track, I think it freshens up everybody's take on the game, and you get a whole new season, and people are excited about that. And so, yeah, it's sad to see Calder go, which I thought had a resurgence. I mean, it was a funny move. You couldn't see it coming, but Calder, the product, had taken kind of a second tier, obviously, down there in Florida for a while, and then the Gulfstream people started to run it and renamed it Gulfstream Park West, and it seemed like the rebranding gave it a little jolt of life, interestingly enough.
Oh, the from a marketing standpoint and from a business standpoint, it was a brilliant maneuver, and it paid off handsomely. And it you know, that little nuance was very clever and definitely paid off. I'm not going to talk too much about what the negotiations and the ins and outs of this have been, but the Gulfstream people, I had Mike Lakow earlier today, I think they'd be quite comfortable to continue having the racing over there. It's CDI that had wanted out of the arrangement and wanted to see this, they didn't really see a purpose in maintaining all the barns and everything that went on with keeping the racetrack active as a racetrack. That was the motivation here, and they went so far as to create a paramutual option with the the sort of half-assed highlight that was put together to fulfill their license for the paramutual part of it. So I could tell from Mike Lakehouse, they've got a plan B for doing more than just limiting. He basically said there wouldn't be turf racing for those for those 2 months, essentially, at Gulfstream. He said they're also considering putting in a synthetic strip as well as an option. So we'll see how they deal with it. Certainly, Seth, there's that group of people, players and fans, that hold out hope that Hialeah management would step in and ask for 6 weeks of dates and make the effort to to get Hialeah, even if it's just a ship in meet. It would be. It's just a tragedy that you've got that facility sitting there and not being utilized. It's grotesque, actually.
Yeah, and it's a track I've never been to, and I'd love to visit sometime just to go and suck in the history of the place. I mean, next time I get down there, maybe that'll be on the agenda, just to get over and take a look at Hialeah, because everybody who's been there, everybody talks about it. Just, and you read about kind of the glory days and, yeah, so I'd just like to go over at some point and soak it in a little bit.
I went, John Parada brought me over with his grandson, and I had never been, and we walked around, and I got to see an inadvertent flight of the flamingos. I'll find it on my Facebook page. I took a video and put it up. It's still as spectacular as ever. The barns are gone, which is sad. They were falling down, and then whatever hurricane pretty much wiped them out. I would have liked to have walked to the barns so I could have seen the exact spot where Ricky Schroeder and John Voigt, in the champ, don't die champ. I would have loved to have seen, because that was filmed at Hialeah, But the fountain, you know, that unbelievable fountain, and the citation statue in the reflection pool, and oh my God, it's just not right that it's not being utilized.
Yeah, like I say, that three track rotation I think was good for everybody, the game in general, and the horses and the horsemen and the tracks. And so it's sad to see that in some of the jurisdictions that has disappeared. But it's the 21st century, and that's the reality we're living with.
Seth, the scene shifts. We'll talk a little bit about the winter action. And Turfway kicks off tonight. Gulfstream kicks off in about an hour. Some thoughts going into the new season, really. I mean, this is, you know, Aqueduct continues. The racing's been fabulous. But Tampa's underway. You love Tampa.
I do. Well, another place I have to get back to that I haven't been to in a while. I got to get down to Tampa Bay Downs at some point sooner rather than later. Obviously, we're in the period where that's a little tough, but when things ease up, perhaps. But I like the racing season. I like Tampa. I really like Oak Lawn. Oak Lawn is really one of my favorite tracks to play during the year. I think you find a lot of value at Oak Lawn, and that's become a favorite of mine over the past few years. Fairgrounds has been fun. Oh, I should give a little shout out to our Capital TV colleague. He's got the Saturday summer program. When you and I are on Sunday mornings, he's on Saturday mornings with Brian Addo. Has been doing the paddock commentary for the first few days down at Fairgrounds, and he was blazing hot the first few days. So, congratulations to the folks at Fairgrounds and Brian for doing a great job down there early in the meet. But I like Fairgrounds as well. Gulfstream Championship meet is what it is, and that's always fun. Also, so I think there's great racing, and then the racing continues in New York. And as you said, I think over the past couple of months, the racing has really been good in New York. And obviously this weekend kind of wraps up the big time racing, but it's a great card at Aqueduct as they move into their kind of winter season, but kicking things off with the Cigar Mile Day, which should be a lot of fun. But overall, as I say, I do like the race. Clearly the favorite time of year is the summertime when you get Saratoga and you get a little Del Mar going. But other than that, I like the wintertime with the little Tampa and a little Oak Lawn as well. We still got to wait for Oak Lawn, but Tampa underway last week. Fairgrounds got underway with a traditional Thanksgiving Day card. And so we have made that shift. And from a handicapping standpoint, I thought I did okay when I was in the other day with looking at a little Fairgrounds and a little Tampa, because my feeling is always the first two, 3 days, maybe up to a week of a new meet, you're just kind of feeling around who's going to get hot, where are the venues that horses are coming from that are going to be more productive, at least early on in a meet. And it seems like normally you're kind of feeling your way around. I felt I did okay over the first couple of days at the two new ones, Tampa and Fairgrounds, last week. So hopefully that continues.
How about some opinions?
I looked at Tampa for today. I'm not going in today because we did a little promo Saturday that kind of went later in the evening. So I just put Tampa on the one sheet for Capital TV. I could look at the late pick four, maybe. Let me just flip. Yeah, the sixth race kicks off the late pick four down at Tampa today. And I was looking through earlier. I don't know if I have some opinions underneath that are okay. And I think there are a couple of races where you can go a little deeper than that. But we kick things off the late pick four Tampa today. It's an $8,000 conditional claimer, 6 furlongs the trip. I went 4, 5, 2, and 9 with quarter on top. And the traditional jockeys and trainers so far have been off to a pretty good start. Gerald Bennett off to a good start. Sammy Camacho off to a good start. Mike Deeney is a guy. I mentioned it before. I met Mike up at Saratoga a couple of years ago because he was training the horse Marrow. So I had a conversation with him up there. But he was he was very hot down at Tampa last year, and he kind of continued for him the rest of the year. So I'd say watch him, and he's done okay. I would say limited starters, but he's done okay early in the meet. But again, seems like some of the traditional guys have gotten off to a good start. So Camacho's on board with Quarter in this sixth race. Comes down from Prairie Meadows, hasn't been seen since August. That's the question mark, but comes back at a reduced rate that might mitigate the layoff. I mean, there's three workouts. They don't really signal one way or the other, but I'll tilt in that direction. Magical Tale at 5-1. Maybe the horse with a little more recency comes out of a win against probably similar type competition up at Monmouth last time. And as they say, you're getting 5-1 there. Weld also at 5-1, comes down from Delaware, has raced as recently as mid-October, has a nice little bullet workout down at Tampa coming into this, so Weld is interesting. Hacienda Boulevard at 15-1 with Villa Gomez on board, also interesting with the early speed coming down from Belterra. So maybe there's a price in there with Hacienda Boulevard to play around with to kick off that early or that late pick for. Seventh race is a made special weight event. Going a mile on the grass. And just before we went on the air, I pulled up the scratches, and it looks like everything's okay. They had a few scratches listed in the ninth, and that was about it so far at Tampa. I mean, I'll check again later, but it looks like things are good to go down there. So I went 3, 10, 8, and 9. I put Gala Gold on top. I'm not sure we'll get the 7-2. I'll take that with Christophe Clement and Sammy Camacho. Hasn't been seen since September at Belmont, but looks to probably have an edge on this bunch if ready off, which, you know, in this day and age, not a super long layoff. So Gaelic Gold on top, Gaelic Tales, maybe an all Gaelic exact in here. Gaelic Tales from Mike Stidham comes in off a nice try last time up at Monmouth in the earlier part of October. Also, nice little bullet workout that says the horse is still on its toes. Golden Ibis and in moderation in the other underneath spots. But in this race, I'm probably tilting more towards the two Gaelic horses, Gaelic Gold and Gaelic Tails. Going on to the eighth race in that late pick four down at Tampa. Optional claimer starter allowance, 7 furlongs. The Trip at 4, 5, 7, and 9. Mizzen Air on top. Comes off the claim, but it was a nice win up at Keeneland. Arrived at Keeneland from Canterbury, so you kind of wondered how the class was going to work out. The betting public wasn't worried. Made the horse 4-5 and led all the way around pretty easily. Class is a question mark here as well, going into this optional starter allowance. But I think from what we saw at Keeneland, Mizzen Air looks pretty good. Bustin' Hearts is 5-1 for Victor Carrasco. Won it off the turf or two back at Delaware, on the turf at Tampa. Just a few days ago. So I kind of like when there's that confidence and a little bit of a quick turnaround. So if this horse, and as I say, early scratches was still in, if this horse comes back and moving back to the dirt where the horse did well, two back at Delaware, could be live. Russian Roulette gets Sammy Camacho with some numbers that I think fit with this group, improving numbers that may have the horse primed for a good try. Elusive Rider at 8-1. I would take a look at maybe if the odds hold and you're looking for a little value. And then in the ninth and final, 16,000 conditional claimers going a mile on the grass. I have it 7, 4, 9, and 10. Wilshire Diamond on top. Comes down on from Indiana Grand off a couple of nice tries. Nice win two back to break the maiden. It was career start number 11. But as we see a lot of times, these horses just kind of get in form. Followed up against non-winners at 2 and just missed. So I think stays in good form. Violator, class-wise, gets a little class relief that could provide a wake-up call coming down from Hawthorne. Now, the last two were on the dirt, but has pretty good turf races going back. And has been at Tampa running decently against this kind going back to June. Hubba Bubba at 8-1 and Free Flame at 10-1. This is the race where maybe I'd play around a little bit with some of those underneath horses at prices. Hubba Bubba hasn't been seen since August at Gulfstream, but I think it's going to fit okay if ready. Another one where the workouts really aren't giving you much of a signal. But if this horse does come back to run, then you get the odds. You can play around with that one. Free Flame coming down from Monmouth, I think, could also be a player. The last couple have been on the dirt. The grass race three back was okay, though. But again, it's just one of those horses, when you look at that one and compare to the rest of the field, I think Free Flame will fit okay. And I think there will be some value there. So you play around maybe a little bit in this ninth race. I have it 7, 4, 9, and 10.
Nice. Tampa today. And Seth, for those that aren't Tampa regulars, I mean, you kind of hit on a couple of themes. Any nuances that you recommend, the things that you rely on there?
I think it's one of the tracks where you do have to definitely pay attention to the three or four jockeys and trainers who go well there, because there are some tracks at that level particularly where everybody's kind of even, but then there are other tracks like Tampa where guys like Gerald Bennett and Sammy Camacho on the jockey side, they just you always have to take a look at their horses they're training or the horses they're riding, and give them kind of the first look when you're handicapping, because they win an awful lot of races. And the pick bets, you may be relying on them a little bit, not getting the value, but shop around and maybe find the value in some of the other races. But it is one of those tracks where I think the top echelon of jockeys and trainers really have to be paid attention to.
Seth Merrow, everybody, coming out of Maine and appreciating Scarborough Downs. I wait till you see the postcard I put up on Twitter. You're going to love it.
I'm sure I will, because when I saw that news, I felt bad. I did feel bad.
Watch for Seth on Capital OTB as the week unfolds. And Seth, appreciate it. We'll talk next week.
Sounds good. Good luck to everybody today.
Seth Merrow giving you some angles on Tampa. Ed DeRosa earlier and I giving you a couple of ideas at Turfway. Did I have a Gulfstream? I don't think I really had a Gulfstream push. Speaking of Gulfstream, thanks to Mike Lakow today, and I guess word is spread about Mike Lakow vowing that the era of post-time drag is over, and they're going to work to stay on the beam. Thanks to Kevin Kilroy and Sid Fernando, Steve Asmussen as well. Good luck today, everybody. Talk to you in the morning.